Well, thank you very much indeed, Sadhu, for inviting me. I am greatly honoured to be here. It's nice to be at this end of Canterbury Street. Normally I'm round on Green Street, so but it's nice to be here with you. Usually it's a Sunday evening when I'm here, so it's nice to have a different setting and context. But thank you for your welcome. I'm very grateful. Back in 1979, as an enthusiastic teenager, I was a member of the old Liberal Party. I was living in Wakefield, West Yorkshire at the time, and I had a strong belief that the Liberal Party was going to do very well in that year. It was a year that there was a general election. Jim Callaghan had called an election. And I remember trudging the streets of Wakefield, putting leaflets through the door, knocking on doors, and asking people in Wakefield if they would vote for the Liberal Party candidate, Norman Collins Tooth. There isn't anybody here called Norman Collins Tooth, is there? No. Alas, it wasn't a good year for the Liberal Party in 1979. Those of you who may remember that far back will remember it was the year that Mrs. Thatcher came to power. The Liberal Party didn't do very well nationally, and it certainly didn't do very well locally, because Norman Collins Tooth lost his deposit. And I was very dismayed, I was very disappointed, I was very, I'd put an awful lot of work in and effort in, and it was all to no end and to no avail. 12 months later, I became a Christian, and I started to see Christianity and the church as the vehicle through which I wanted to champion the cause of social change. But my politics haven't changed. And the point I wanted to make to begin with this morning is that when we come to the subject of Christianity and politics, all of us inevitably come to the subject with our minds already made up. We are all political animals. And I hazard to guess that most of us come to our faith with our politics already formed, rather than the other way around. Our political views are shaped by our background, by our upbringing, by our parents, by our biology, by a whole variety of things that might have happened to us along life's way. Our politics are formed very early on. And many of us, most of us, if not all of us, will bring that political formation to our Christian outlook and Christian views. Strictly speaking, technically, it should be the other way around. Strictly speaking, it should be the other way around. But in reality, in practice, we bring our politics to our faith rather than our faith to our politics. A few years ago, in one of the London mayoral elections, various parties were standing, the usual parties were standing. But there was also a Christian party that was standing. And some people said, great, wonderful, we've got a Christian party standing. Isn't that good? And I thought, is it? How can you have a Christian party? Because at some point in time, at a certain juncture in time, you're going to have to make political choices. You're going to have to say, lower taxes or higher taxes. You're going to have to say lower public spending or higher public spending. And at that moment in time, you are making the usual political decisions and the usual political choices. When we come to the subject of politics and Christianity and politics, there is no purely Christian viewpoint. There will be genuine Christians who are conservatives, genuine Christians who are Labour, genuine Christians who are Lib Dem, Green, UKIP, Brexit, you name it, what you like. There is no purely Christian political viewpoint. And we need to understand that if we want to understand the issue that we are looking at this morning. The deacon in my first church, who told me that Christianity should stay out of politics, was himself being political. He had very strong political views himself, and he didn't mind sharing them. It was just that my views didn't tally with his, and he wasn't very keen on me sharing mine, but he was all right with him sharing his. When it comes to politics, we are all biased. We are all prejudiced. We all have views on a wide range of political issues. I have chosen Bible readings this morning that make the points I want to make. If I'd have taken a reading from Romans chapter 13, it would have taken me in a different direction, and that isn't very congenial to me, so I decided not to go there. Scold me, reprimand me, tell me that my handling of Scripture is selective and biased, and I entirely agree it is. But then I suspect yours might be equally biased as well. The Old Testament prophets delivered God's mind and God's verdict, not just on religious matters, but on every aspect of society. Sin was not simply a personal matter. It was not just connected with personal moral transgressions. It was seen in a much broader social setting. In Amos, in Micah, in Isaiah, sin is seen as depriving the poor of justice. In Amos, in Micah, in Isaiah, sin is seen as depriving the poor of justice. Sin is not paying workers their wages. Sin is not having honest weight scales so that you cheat people out of their fair amount of corn. Sin, Amos 5:11, is where you impose a straw tax on the poor and impose a tax on their grain. Sin is where people perform all their religious ceremonies perfectly and have wonderful uplifting worship to gladden the souls of the saints, and yet on the doorstep are people in desperate poverty and clamouring for the most basic needs to be met. The God of the Old Testament is concerned about every aspect of human life. The God of the Old Testament is concerned about every aspect of human life. And he expects his people and his followers likewise to be concerned about every aspect of human life as well. In the Old Testament law, you find that there are four categories of people who are singled out for special treatment. Four categories of people who it is said, you must care for these people. And they are the poor, the widows, the orphans, and the alien in your midst, or the foreigner in your midst. And the reason that these four are singled out for special treatment is the fact that they have got no stake in society. Because they are people who are rootless, who have got nothing to support themselves. And so the call is to care for these people, to look after these people, to watch over these people. And there's a line which often comes in the Old Testament when it's talking about the alien and the foreigner. And it says, take care of the alien and the foreigner in your midst, because you yourselves were once foreigners and aliens in Egypt as well. Care for those in your midst. Care for those in your midst. Care for those in your society who are most vulnerable. That is the call of God in the Old Testament. And when we come to the New Testament and we turn to the Gospels, we find Jesus there in Luke chapter 4 laying out his manifesto, his priorities. These are the things that matter to him. And they talk about the releasing the blind, the poor, the oppressed. And we can turn around and we can say, yes, well, maybe it's talking about those who are spiritually blind or spiritually poor or spiritually oppressed. And we can come to that conclusion, but if we come to that conclusion, we are moving away from the self-evident meaning of that passage. Because it becomes blatantly clear, it seems to me, that Jesus is setting out here in Luke 4 very much a this-worldly agenda. A this-world agenda. He's concerned about the issues of this world, this life, not just the life that is to come. And so Jesus, in his ministry, he reaches out to people who are blind and he gives them their sight. And he does so because he cares for people. He wants somebody to have their health back, their sight back, because people matter to him. One of the great words that we find in the New Testament, in the Gospels, is that word compassion. Because it reflects Jesus' mind and Jesus' heart. Jesus reaches out to love people as people because he cares for people as people. Jesus feeds 5,000 people. And he feeds 5,000 people not just because, not to perform a magic trick, but because people were hungry and needed feeding, and he wanted to feed people. He wanted to see people well fed. And so Jesus goes and does that as well. Jesus' agenda is a this world agenda. He's concerned about the plight of people in this world. He wants the quality of life for people in this world to improve. That's what Jesus was about. And he calls his followers, those of us who take on the mantle of Christ, he calls his followers to be about the same things as well. To be caring for those who are sick, those who are needy, those who are poor, those who are struggling. Should Christians be involved in politics? Of course Christians should be involved in politics. Christians should be involved in every aspect of life because God concerns himself with every aspect of life. Christians should be involved in every aspect of human society because God is concerned about every aspect of human society. Sadhu is absolutely right. There is not a possibility of finding a division between secular and spiritual in God's world because it's all one. It's all one. Should Christians be involved in politics? Yes, they should. Few of us will ever be involved at a national level, and I take my hat off to those who do, and credit where credit is due. Many of us would struggle in that environment. Many of us would be totally out of our depth in that environment. And we do need to pray for those who are committed to working on a national political level. But each of us, as individuals, can still have a concern for our fellow human beings. Each of us as individuals can have a passion for those things that really move our spirit deeply. Each of us can pray into the life of our communities, we can pray into the life of our world, we can involve ourselves in those things. And sometimes as Christians as well, we can get involved in particular causes and issues and campaigns. And if I was just in finishing to highlight three areas, which to me, no, I can't count, four areas which for me personally are important, then I'll leave that with you as to whether they chime with your heart as well. But one of them is the area of poverty at home and abroad. Just as Jesus went around doing good and healing people, just as Jesus went around ministering to the poor, then I think as Christ people we have a commitment and a calling to work for the plight of those who are poor at home and abroad. The parable of the rich man and Lazarus that Jesus tells speak powerfully into our responsibilities in that area. the plight of refugees, and I'm really delighted to hear what Raymond was saying earlier, the plight of refugees and those fleeing violence has to be a concern for Christ's followers and for Christ's people. The words of Cain in Genesis chapter 4, "Am I my brother's keeper?" are echoed by people throughout the land. "It has nothing to do with me," they say. "It's not my concern. It's not my responsibility." And God comes back and says, "It is your concern. It is your responsibility, because these people are my concern and my responsibility." His concern for the poor, for the alien, for the foreigner, they need to be our concern as well. And for those who struggle with justice, those who are denied justice, God's people need to campaign for that and work for that. Because if we don't, then who will? Issues, thirdly, of global warming, it seems to me, are also vitally important as a Christian concern. Since God charges all of us in Genesis 1 and 2 with safeguarding the planet and with being good stewards of creation. And fourthly, and I hope I'm not being too controversial when I say this, that one of the other areas that I think as Christ people we need to have a concern for is the whole area of peace and reconciliation and bringing people together. To do all that we can to see cooperation between different groups and sections in society and in the world. There is a vision that's laid out in Isaiah chapter 2 and Micah chapter 4 with the Lord settling disputes between nations, beating swords into plowshares and spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. That is a vision at the heart of Scripture. And as Christ people, it seems to me that it's laid upon our hearts to work for peace and reconciliation, to try and work locally and nationally and internationally as well, to see people coming together, cooperating, working together. Jesus Christ came into the world as the Prince of Peace, and he calls his followers to be peacemakers. And in this world of ours today, we should take on that mantle of Christ to work for peace and justice and reconciliation in our world. When we become Christians, when we become followers and disciples of Jesus Christ, we're not inhabiting a religious world. We're not simply immersing ourselves in the world of the church. It's about being Christ's witnesses, ambassadors, servants in the world. It's about being salt and light. It's about bringing the values and the priorities of Jesus into the secular world. And about bringing a Christ-like mind and a Christian life to address some of the major ills and injustices and wrongs in our world. All of us are political animals by dint of our being human. All of us are political animals by dint of our living in this world. And the challenge for each of us is to get inside the mind of Christ. And through our prayers and through our actions, to try and implement his agenda in our world.